In addition to cooking with the acceptable oils, take a fish oil capsule before each meal. Or mix flavored cod liver oil. I love Carlson's lemon or orange flavors with an acceptable oil to dress salads or cooked veggies. Vegans and vegetarians can use an algal DHA capsule instead. Nuts, particularly pistachios, walnuts, macadamias, and pecans, which are full of polyphenols, promote the growth of gut buddies. Nut consumption is also associated with reduced risk of overall mortality. You can have a quarter cup of Dr. G's new and improved world-famous nut mix twice daily. Consume figs, which are technically flowers, not fruit, and use dates or dried figs as a sweetener in limited amounts. Both are full of the FOS that boosts the growth of good gut bugs and overall health. Add figs and dates to salads or toss a couple of dates into a smoothie. I realize that this is a lot to absorb, but let me remind you to do the best you can do with what you have and where you are. See the Say Yes Please list for more specifics. If you are unfamiliar with any of these foods, see the enhancement for sources and further explanation. The Crucifer Paradox. Although you should eat as many vegetables in the cabbage family, crucifers, as possible, if you have been told or suspect that you have IBS or leaky gut, remember my advice to overcook all crucifers initially. When eaten raw or in large quantities, these vegetables often cause stomach upset and diarrhea. If you are new to them, increase your intake gradually. Crucifers, including sauerkraut, activate specialized white blood cells in the intestinal lining, and those cells contain receptors that calm the immune system gone awry. Compounds in cruciferous veggies thus alert the border patrol on your gut wall to calm down and not shoot anything that moves. These receptors are called the AH receptors. When activated, your immune cells say, "Ah, now you know why Mom made you eat your broccoli." Your gut buddies get to eat sugar. Your gut buddies require indigestible, for you, sugars for proper growth and function, particularly the guys that guard and feed the cells that line your gut. These indigestible sugars are called prebiotics, not to be confused with probiotics, which are the friendly bacteria that are the seeds in your new rainforest. Unless you feed probiotics what they need to grow, meaning prebiotics, they will perish. Fructo-oligosaccharides, FOS, are a special form of prebiotic, which feed the gut buddies that live near your gut wall, stimulating the mucus production that protects you from lectins and LPSs. Want more good news? Many prebiotics contain polyphenols. According to research at the Cleveland Clinic, the polyphenols in fruit pulp also paralyze certain enzymes in gut bugs, preventing them from converting the animal proteins carnitine and choline into an artery-damaging compound called TMAO. Bid adieu to gut busters. As well as making the dietary changes mentioned previously, stop taking antibiotics if at all possible. Note, however, that you should always check with your healthcare provider before doing so. In addition, eliminate all stomach acid-blocking drugs. Instead, use antacids such as Rolaids or Tums as necessary. You will be shocked at how quickly your heartburn will disappear when following this program. You can also take betaine or marshmallow root and chew DGL. For more information, go to www.drgundry.com. Eliminate NSAIDs and replace with Tylenol or preferably 5-loxin Boswellia extract. There are several good products that contain Boswellia, such as Now Deflame and MRM Joint Synergy. Again, for more information, go to www.drgundry.com. Additional important supplements. I have already advised you to take a fish oil supplement before each meal, but let me get a bit more specific. In terms of dosage, take the capsule with the highest number of milligrams of DHA you can afford. You'll need about 1,000 milligrams per day. In addition to protecting the lining of your gut, fish oil consumption is associated with a bigger hippocampus and overall larger brain size, making it an important tool in avoiding dementia and other neurological problems associated with aging. I cannot emphasize enough that the vast majority of people are profoundly vitamin D deficient. In my opinion, vitamin D is the single most important missing ingredient necessary to restore your gut health and therefore your overall health. It is essential to stimulate the growth of enterocyte stem cells, which repair the gut wall that has been damaged by lectins on a daily basis. In my 15 years of experience as a practitioner of restorative medicine, pushing vitamin D blood levels up to 70 to 100 nanograms per milliliter per day is necessary for most people and may require upward of 40,000 IUs a day to achieve. I have absolutely no qualms keeping my patients' levels of vitamin D greater than 100 milliliters, which is where I keep mine. However, unless a healthcare professional is checking your levels, limit yourself to 5,000 to 10,000 IUs initially. In addition, restore your gut flora with targeted probiotics, Bacillus coagulans, BC30, available at any drugstore under the trade name Shift Digestive Advantage, or other probiotics such as L-Reuteri and Saccharomyces boulardii, and stomach mucus enhancers like DGL, deglycyrrhizinated licorice root, slippery elm, and marshmallow root. Repel invaders by rebuilding stomach acid with betaine and grapefruit seed extract. Repair the gut wall with vitamin D and fish oil, as we discussed previously, as well as with L-glutamine, a protein that feeds gut cells, butyric acid from ghee, polyphenols like grape seed extract and pycnogenol, and anthocyanins, the polyphenols in dark berries like blackberries. All are available over the counter. Reactivate and calm white blood cells in the intestinal lining with the supplements Indole-3 carbinol and DIM, or simply increase your intake of cruciferous veggies. For recommended doses and a schedule, go to www.drgundry.com. Success story. Taming the relish. Jane Y., a 50-year-old nurse who lives in the Pacific Northwest, had been troubled by intractable migraines for most of her life. She had run the gamut of treatment options without success. Jane sought me out after hearing of my successes with other migraine sufferers, including myself. I know from personal experience how awful migraines can be. She immediately started the Plant Paradox program, and within days, her migraines abated. She was delighted, but after a few months, she visited to discuss a dilemma. One of Jane's passions is canning and eating a zucchini and tomato relish she makes with the vegetables in her garden. With both fruits now off limits and canning time fast approaching, she was in a quandary. I suggested that we do a lectin challenge. She should can half of her relish using her traditional canning method and the other half using a pressure cooker. Jane returned home delighted, and a few weeks later she called me. Not surprising, within a few minutes of eating her regular canned relish, wham, a migraine struck. But the next day, when she gingerly tasted her pressure-cooked relish, nothing happened. She ate some more, and again, nothing. Jane was back in business with her relish. Thanks to her lectin sensitivity, she has gone on to become one of my most cherished lectin testers. Despite her best efforts with pressure cooking wheat, oats, rye, and barley for an hour, that is a long time in a pressure cooker, she still gets migraines from these grains. Putting it all together, my patients have been remarkably successful in constructing a diet that they can live with, literally and figuratively, just by following the two food lists and the rules we've discussed. Having said that, a few tips are in order. Breakfast may seem daunting initially, but it is actually pretty easy. My wife Penny and I have a green smoothie nearly every day, unless I am doing intermittent fasting, which is discussed in the next chapter. Bars from the approved list, certain Quest bars, certain Yup bars, the Human Food Bar, and the Adapt bar, also all work well. The first two contain 20 grams of animal protein apiece, so the protein content adds up quickly. But by far, my patients' favorite breakfasts are muffins, either the cinnamon and flaxseed or the coconut and almond flour variety. Ready in just a couple of minutes in the microwave, they can be easily transported to work or school. Try the perfect plantain pancakes on the weekend. Finally, two pastured or omega-3 eggs or 1/4 cup of Dr. G's new and improved world-famous nut mix are filling, meaning you can probably skip a morning snack. Got to have yogurt? I prefer plain, unflavored, and unsweetened coconut milk yogurt. But if that is unavailable, plain goat or sheep milk yogurt will do fine. Both are casein A2, which is good, although they do contain new 5-GC. Snacks. You can have a morning and afternoon snack in this phase, at least initially. The advent of single-serving organic guacamole, it contains no peppers, by Holy Guacamole, available at most Costco stores, has made portable guacamole my go-to snack if I need one. Buy sliced jicama at Trader Joe's or Whole Foods to serve as dipping chips, or bake up a batch of Paradox crackers. Alternatively, carry cut-up pieces of romaine lettuce or Napa or Belgian endive in a mason jar or stainless steel container. Or reach for a 1/4 cup of my nut mix. Just don't overdo it on the nut front, since they are notoriously difficult to stop eating. Lunch on the run. This is the meal my patients find the least challenging to adapt to their new lifestyle. A salad always hits the spot. Carry it with you, pre-made, or purchase it at most grocery stores or a salad bar. Keep in mind that most prepared salad dressings, even the better ones, are made with toxic oils and often corn syrup. Carry a portion of balsamic or other vinegar mixed with extra virgin olive oil in a small shaker bottle instead. In a restaurant, ask for dressing on the side, or simply order olive oil and vinegar. No olive oil? Vinegar and/or lemon juice will do just fine. Dinner. This is where you get to have fun and feed your gut buddies what they like. That means that animal protein plays a supporting role in your meals, not the central one with which most of us grew up. Consider the palm of your hand, don't include the fingers, as the size of your protein portion for the night. I would prefer that you choose wild, non-threatened, smaller fish, or wild shellfish. A reliable guide is available at the Monterey Aquarium, www.seafoodwatch.org. Always consider incorporating the protein into a salad. Think of a Caesar salad topped with grilled or boiled shrimp, or tossed with shirataki noodles, kelp noodles, miracle noodles, Capello's fettuccine, or another acceptable form of pasta. A spiralizer is a great tool for turning root vegetables into noodles. My wife and I share a large mixing bowl of salad every night, regardless of what else we are eating. And several nights a week, it is all we have for dinner. Let me assure you, we are never hungry. Vegetarians can use the approved types of corn, a mushroom-like product with a meaty texture. Hemp tofu, available at Whole Foods, or tempeh without grains, found in most grocery stores or health food stores. Hillary's Root Veggie Burger is a delicious product I discovered recently, but avoid the lectin bombs and other veggie burgers at all costs. See the recipes in the enhancement for more suggestions. Get out of the dinner rut. I always try to encourage my patients to rotate vegetable choices with seasonal availability, but I realize that studies show that most people rotate between 5 and 6 go-to vegetables. Why not try to buck that trend? After all, each vegetable has a unique set of phytonutrients. Changing them frequently delights your gut buddies. And mixing things up helps avoid mealtime monotony. Thanks to misguided nutritional advice, dinner is often associated with having a starch. But that advice rarely, if ever, includes a certain category of starches that you and I should cherish, the resistant starches, aka soluble fibers. These are tightly bound chains of sugar molecules that are nearly impossible for your digestive enzymes to break down to be absorbed, which is why they are called resistant. These unabsorbed sugars arrive deep in your intestines, where your gut buddies are just waiting for their favorite meal. The gut bacteria convert these sugars into short-chain saturated fats that power you and your intestinal cells. And the best news is that the gang members can't use these sugars for fuel, so they are starved out. Enjoy that sweet potato, or some turnips, parsnips, or rutabagas, among an array of other choices on the Say Yes Please list. Your gut buddies will thank you. After about 6 weeks, most people really start hitting their groove. If you are one of them, it is time to join me at the next stage of your health journey. However, if you are not ready, you can stay on this phase longer. In fact, there is really no need to move on. Some of my patients have taken a year to regrow the rainforest in their gut. You may take even longer. Everybody's different. You may even choose to spend the rest of your healthy life in this phase. There are plenty of healthy options available to you, and there's no need to compare yourself to other people. This is not a race. Having said that, if your weight returns to normal, aches and pains alleviate or vanish, brain fog clears, persistent gut issues and any autoimmune symptoms abate, then it is probably time to meet me in the next chapter. Chapter 9, Phase 3, Reap the Rewards. Phase 3 is akin to the harvest, when you enjoy the sustained benefits of the symbiotic relationship between what you consider yourself and your holobiome. Vitality, weight management, and longevity blessed with good health. Think of it this way. Your goal is to die young at a very old age. Once their inner you, the gut, is happily stabilized, most of my patients who initially came to me to lose weight notice that this desired result is part and parcel of their overall improved health. In other words, if you are doing everything right, you will return to your appropriate weight, whether you were underweight or overweight when you started the Plant Paradox program. My autoimmune and arthritis patients revel in their pain-free and energized new lives. In fact, all my patients who attain success with the program embrace the fact that it is a lifestyle, not simply a diet. You achieve two things in this lifestyle phase. First, you will ascertain whether your gut is indeed healed and that your gut buddies are happy and empowered to keep you in continued good health. Second, you can test whether you can reintroduce certain lectins, but only if those gut bugs are happy and only after the minimum of 6 weeks spent in phase two. Don't feel you have to rush to test your tolerance for lectins just because 42 days have elapsed. If you prefer, continue to follow the meal plans for phase two, including vegan and vegetarian variations. If you are in no hurry to try adding back some formerly problematic lectin foods, in the enhancement, you will find meal plans for a phase three, 5-day modified vegan fast you can follow on a monthly basis if you wish. Patients will be rewarded. How long beyond the 6 weeks before you can try to reintroduce some lectins? When you achieve the goal of ongoing good health depends, of course, on the particular condition or set of conditions you had when you started the Plant Paradox program. Thanks to the sophisticated blood tests I run on my patients every 3 months, I can spot when a patient's rainforest has been restored and the gang members and their LPSs have vacated the premises. However, my patients can also usually sense themselves when this occurs. So, I'm going to let you decide when it's time, if ever, to try reintroducing small amounts of lectin-containing foods into your gut. How do you make that decision? Have your bowel movements become normal? One test that many of my successful patients report is that they no longer need toilet paper. You are hearing that correctly. Think about it. Do you see your dog using toilet paper? There's no need with perfectly formed poops. Your great ape cousins don't need TP either. If everything is as it should be, there is no sense of urgency as a result of loose or poorly formed stools to push out lectins or bad bugs. It's a fascinating test to tell that things are returning to normal. Need I remind you that all illness starts in the gut? Have your joints stopped hurting? Has your brain fog cleared? Has your skin cleared? Is your face glowing? And has any acne disappeared? Is your energy level over the top? Do you sleep without restlessness or awakening several times a night? If you were overweight, are you now wearing a smaller size? Or, if you were underweight at the start, are you filling out your clothes more? If the answer to any of these questions is no, please don't get antsy and make the mistake of trying to leave phase two prematurely. You're not ready yet. Similarly, if you have been diagnosed with an autoimmune condition, or even suspect that you have one, or if you've had your tonsils removed, are hypothyroid, have arthritis or heart disease, have chronic sinus issues, or you see yourself in any of the accounts of my canaries, those folks who are super sensitive to lectins, I urge you not to waver in your avoidance of the foods on the Just Say No list. All too often, I have witnessed the reversal of good fortune as the result of small and seemingly harmless missteps. Don't be in too much of a hurry to experiment with your tolerance for foods that you have given up for the last month and a half. Fortunately, most of you are not canaries. And in this phase, I want to teach you some techniques to ensure that you have a lifestyle you can live with literally and physically. I'm also going to illuminate the tricks shared by most long-lived societies, along with the cutting-edge research that confirms the principles that you'll put into practice. Despite what you have heard about the so-called blue zones, most of these cultures have striking similarities that escape cursory inspection. The common misconception is that these cultures appear to have very different dietary practices. The staple foods differ among them, but in fact, they all share a unifying dietary practice, which I have already mentioned. This universal practice is the restricted consumption of animal protein, which I believe is the key to a vibrant health span. As a native of Nebraska, which dubs itself the beef state, along with its official designation as the Cornhusker state, what do you think those cows eat? It saddens me to admonish you about this fact. But the truth is that animal protein intake is low in all these long-lived societies. Animal and now human studies validate that long life is associated with eating minimal amounts of meat, poultry, and even fish. Finally, I'm going to show you that perhaps you can have your cake and eat it too. No, not that kind of cake. By employing the practice commonly referred to as intermittent fasting. This involves periodically prolonging the periods of time between meals or just restricting protein consumption and overall calories intake a certain number of days each month or each week. I'm going to take you through this step by step. Success story. The food chain, up close and personal. Patrick M., a 45-year-old executive from the Midwest with chronic fatigue syndrome, arthritis, and hypertension, sought my help after he had visited some of the finest spas and health centers in Switzerland, all to no avail. Within 6 weeks of going on the Plant Paradox program, all his symptoms cleared and he was able to stop his blood pressure medications. He also felt alert and his arthritis abated, allowing him to resume his active travel schedule. When we spoke by telephone 6 months into the program, Patrick noted that he was doing well, except when he dined out on the road. Despite eating his safe fallback foods of chicken or shrimp, his symptoms returned. He speculated that it might be because flour and the gluten it supposedly contained had been used in cooking these foods. What he hadn't grasped was that the chicken or shrimp served in a restaurant had probably been fed corn and soybeans, meaning he was eating what the thing he was eating ate. Within a month of stopping these safe foods, Patrick reported that he was no longer experiencing any fatigue or pain. The trigger wasn't hidden gluten. Rather, it was the shrimp and chicken, which might as well have been corn and soybeans. The program, phase 3. Unlike the first two phases, which have a suggested duration, this is really a lifestyle. Staying on this phase indefinitely will greatly enhance your chances of living to a ripe old age without being plagued with an array of health issues. You will continue to eat much the way you have been eating, and depending upon your tolerance for lectins, you can make some dietary changes. Continue to eat foods on the Say Yes Please list, consuming primarily locally grown foods that have been picked when ripe, meaning in-season produce. Once your gut is repaired, consume more ketogenic fats. These are medium-chain saturated fatty acids, such as MCT oil or coconut oil, that kickstart fat burning rather than being stored as fat. Continue to avoid the just-say-no foods. However, if you wish to and can do so, gradually reintroduce small amounts of immature, no seeds or only tiny seeds, lectin-bearing foods such as cucumbers, zucchini, and Japanese eggplant to test your tolerance. Try one at a time for a week before trying another food. Later, if you can handle these foods, try to introduce heirloom tomatoes and peppers that have been seeded and had the skins removed. Give each a week to see how you do before introducing another. Next, try to introduce pressure-cooked legumes in small amounts. Again, do this 1 week at a time. Hey, there's no rush. You've got the rest of your life, after all. Finally, after you've reintroduced the lectin-containing foods and are doing well, you might be able to introduce Indian white basmati rice in extreme moderation or other grains and pseudograins that have been pressure cooked, with the exception of barley, rye, oats, and wheat, all of which contain gluten. We'll discuss pressure cooking later in this chapter. Eat less food overall and have less frequent meals. As you'll learn in Chapter 10, this will give your gut, brain, and mitochondria the chance to rest between doing the work of digestion and energy production, as well as minimize the time that LPSs are loose in your body. Progressively reduce your animal protein to no more than 2 ounces per day. Instead, derive the vast majority of protein from leaves, certain vegetables, mushrooms, nuts, and hemp. Continue to take the supplements recommended in phase 2. Periodically, try to fast and restrict your caloric intake, particularly in the form of animal protein. I'll present some specifics on how to do this later in the chapter. Restore daily and seasonal rhythms with exposure to daylight, ideally for an hour each day at or near midday. Also, get 8 hours of sleep a night and regular exercise. Avoid blue light as much as possible in the evenings and use one or more of the blocking strategies discussed in Blue Light Trojan Horses. Success story: a nut allergy cured. When Amelia W. asked me for help, she was 51 years old and had diabetes, high blood pressure, and high cholesterol. She also said that she had such a severe allergy to all nuts that she carried an EpiPen of epinephrine, adrenaline, in case she had an attack after accidentally eating nuts in a restaurant. I explained that her immune system was so activated by lectins and LPSs that it was shooting at any foreign protein regardless of whether it was friend or foe. She shrugged her shoulders, nodded, and said, "Sure, just help me lose weight." She started the Plant Paradox program. 6 months later, she was down 30 pounds, and her diabetes, hypertension, and cholesterol problems were only a memory. However, it was her recent experience at a restaurant that caught my attention. Amelia and a girlfriend had a Caesar salad at a hip place in Los Angeles. During the meal, she noticed that her eyes were itchy and watering a bit, but she tossed it off as a result of a lot of dust in the air. When she awoke the next morning, her eyes were still a bit puffy. She thought nothing more about it until her girlfriend called in horror 2 days later to say that she had discovered that the restaurant used walnuts in the creamy Caesar dressing. But instead of calling her attorney, my patient bought a bag of pistachios and another of macadamia nuts. She started with tiny bites and waited. Nothing happened. More nuts, bigger bites, but still nothing happened. Then a handful of nuts, but still no reaction. She was now eating nuts with abandon. She wanted me to know that she was cured. In fact, though, she wasn't cured of anything. Her immune system had been re-educated by her gut buddies to chill out, and those nuts were her gut buddies' friends, and now her friends as well. Testing the waters. Beans and other legumes. Even my non-vegetarians and non-vegan patients miss their beans, and as I noted in Chapter 6, you can try to reintroduce legumes as long as you cook them in a modern one-touch pressure cooker. Simply follow the cooking directions that come with your machine. Beans are a great source of resistant starches, the sugars that your gut bugs can use, as long as you remove those nasty lectins. When compared with animal protein, bean protein is associated with greater longevity, at least in a head-to-head comparison between beans and beef. Interestingly, when compared with red meats, eating fish or chicken did not appear to reduce longevity. The safest grain. Of the 4 billion people who use rice as their staple grain, most opt for white rice. Rice eaters traditionally have little or no heart disease, a fact that I attribute to the lack of wheat germ agglutinin, WGA, from wheat in their diet. In my opinion, if you're going to add a grain back into your diet, the safest option is white basmati rice from India, not the American strain. Indian white basmati rice has the most resistant starch of any variety. You can make the starch even more resistant by refrigerating rice after cooking and then reheating it before using it, or making a cold rice salad. That said, if you have diabetes, pre-diabetes, or cancer, or if weight loss is your goal, stay away from even this relatively benign grain. And do remember, sorghum and millet are the only grains that contain no lectins, meaning they are safe from the get-go. Only in America. Nightshades. The Italians and French learned 2 centuries ago to peel and seed tomatoes before eating them or even when cooking with them. Tomatoes, peppers, eggplant, and other members of the nightshade family are the next group of lectin-containing foods to try to reintroduce, in limited quantities, of course, and always peeled and deseeded. Americans have been slower to adopt these techniques to defang the nightshade family. To easily peel tomatoes, immerse them in boiling water for about 30 seconds. Or pierce tomatoes on a long fork and rotate them over the flame of your gas burner. Do the same with peppers until they blacken and then place in a paper bag to cool. The skin will easily peel off. Squash. As with tomatoes, peel, skin, and eliminate the seeds before eating squash. Alternatively, eat baby summer squash. Do not spiralize mature squash unless you peel and deseed them first. Peel and remove the seeds of winter squash before cooking as well. Regardless, always keep in mind that these are fruits, not vegetables. And long ago, our forebears ate them only to gain weight for the winter. A word of warning. The fructose in these fruits, even though we call them vegetables, is often enough to initiate weight regain, as a number of my well-meaning patients have experienced. If your scale is heading in the wrong direction after reintroducing these fruits, simply reverse course. Cease and desist eating any food that stimulates weight gain or makes it difficult to control your appetite. The same advice applies to pressure-cooked grains or beans. Remember, there is no human need for these foods. A 2-by-3-inch muscle in your mouth, that's right, it's called your tongue, should not rule or ruin your health. A pound of flesh? No way. I have mentioned the dangers of excessive intake of animal protein earlier, but now it's time to really start the culling process. 2 recent human studies have hammered the final nail in the animal protein coffin, a fact already established in animal studies. Both studies conclude that meat consumption contributes to the current epidemic of obesity as much as, if not more than, our staggeringly high consumption of sugar does. Yes, you heard that correctly. Eating meat makes you as fat as eating sugar does. Luckily, no such strong association was found with fish or shellfish consumption. I recommend these 2 as the best choices for non-vegans and non-vegetarians. Moreover, red meat contains new 5GC, the sugar molecule linked to both cancer and heart disease. Think about that the next time you paleo folks reach for that grass-fed steak, hot dog, or slab of bacon. Instead, enjoy some wild salmon or shrimp. The combination of meat and the bread or buns on which it is served at fast food restaurants creates the perfect storm in a way you would never expect. The simple sugars in the fries, chips, bun, or bread enter your bloodstream as sugar almost immediately. In fact, A single slice of whole wheat bread raises your blood sugar higher and faster than 4 tablespoons of straight sugar. The meat that you ate is more slowly digested, entering your bloodstream slightly later. Unfortunately, your cells are full of the sugar from the bun or fries you ate, so there is no need for more calories. Little did you know, when this occurs, that protein converts to sugar, which immediately turns into fat. What are the blue zones? Journalist Dan Buettner teamed up with National Geographic to visit and research parts of the world where people live the longest, reaching the century mark at 10 times the overall rate achieved in the United States. After publishing an article about his findings in the magazine, Buettner went on to write the best-selling book, The Blue Zones. And the winners are the Italian island of Sardinia, Okinawa, Japan, Loma Linda, California, yes, where I was once a professor, the Nicoya Peninsula of Costa Rica, and the Greek island of Icaria. The key is that all these different dietary styles share one thing and one thing only. They dramatically limit animal protein. Stay tuned, as we are going to do a deep dive into this subject shortly. A look at the Mediterranean diet. Astute listeners will notice that 2 of the blue zones are found on the islands in the Mediterranean. So perhaps you are thinking that you should eat the Mediterranean diet and not have to give up grains. I know, I love bread too. It is positively addictive. Sadly, I have to inform you that meta-analysis shows that cereal grains are actually a negative component of this diet, which is countered by vegetables rich in polyphenols, as well as the olive oil and red wine consumed in the region. In fact, because the lectins in grain bind to joint cartilage, Italians overall have significantly high rates of arthritis. Sardinians have a high proportion of autoimmune diseases. And my Adventist friends from Loma Linda keep their orthopedic surgery department very busy. Remember, your goal is longevity with vibrant health, not just limping along for another year on the planet. Success story. When bread is not bread. Susan R. emigrated from Hungary to Los Angeles seeking a movie career. But shortly after arriving, the 27-year-old began experiencing severe stomach pain, cramps, and bloody diarrhea. When a workup revealed Crohn's disease, her doctor recommended that she start immune-suppressing drugs. Shocked that this was her fate at such an early age, she visited me at the urging of an actor friend. Laboratory tests showed classic lectin intolerance and massive inflammation. Susan started the Plant Paradox program, and within 2 weeks, the abdominal pain began to subside, and her bowel movements became normal. She continued to thrive and returned to her active life. About a year later, she returned to Hungary, where, at the urging of her family, she dined on local breads and yogurt, both of which had been forbidden on my program. To her delight, she suffered absolutely no gastric distress. Back in Los Angeles, convinced that she was cured, she began eating local yogurt and breads. Within days, all her previous problems returned with a vengeance. A quick visit with me confirmed that her immune system was reactivated. How could that be? When she was in her homeland, Susan was eating bread that had been made with yeast and sourdough cultures and with wheat that hadn't been sprayed with Roundup. The yeast and sourdough starters ate the lectins in the wheat. And the milk used to make the yogurt came from casein-A2 cows that had not been fed corn or soybeans with a Roundup chaser. With nothing to disturb her gut buddies, she was fine. But when Susan returned and ate American yogurt and bread, what she was eating was totally unlike what she had eaten in Hungary. The bread wasn't simply bread, and the yogurt wasn't simply yogurt, because you are not just what you eat, but also how what you are eating was prepared and raised. Susan's story has a happy ending. In this country, she avoids our lethal foods, but when she is in Hungary, she eats the same foods, which of course are not the same at all, and they nourish her and her gut buddies. The protein connection. Still don't believe that moderating animal protein intake is the answer to a long, healthy life? As Simon and Garfunkel sang, a man hears what he wants to hear and disregards the rest. Let's take a look at the science. With the exception of one rhesus monkey study conducted at the National Institute on Aging, NIA, calorie restriction has been shown to extend lifespan in all animals, including a University of Wisconsin study of rhesus monkeys. While calorie-restricted monkeys had a better health span than did their conventionally fed companions in both studies, monkeys in both groups died at the same age only in the NIA study. The University of Wisconsin, using the same breed, reached the opposite conclusion that indeed calorie restriction increased lifespan. Who was right? When Wisconsin researchers looked at the data of the NIA study, they found and reported that all the NIA animals were calorie restricted, and the proteins used in the two studies might be the real explanation of differences, since the University of Wisconsin monkeys ate less protein and more carbs. Astute listeners will note that this mimics the habits of the people in blue zones. Researchers at St. Louis University, who have followed members of the CR Society International for years, these folks restrict their calories, eating about 20 to 30% fewer calories than normal, decided to put the animal protein hypothesis to yet another test. Despite eating a lot fewer calories, the CR folks had IGF-1 levels that were about the same as those of people eating a normal diet. No wonder those rhesus monkeys of the NIA study didn't live longer than their more rotund study mates. The researchers then recruited vegans and measured their IGF-1 levels, only to find them much lower than those of the calorie-restricted group. For the ultimate test, several CR members were asked to cut their animal protein consumption without changing their total calorie intake. Lo and behold, down went their IGF-1 scores to parallel those of the vegans. This means that if you want to be in the game, meaning the game of life, for the long haul, cut down on animal protein, or cut it out entirely. I recommend no more than 2 ounces a day. Want more than that at a sitting? No problem. Just go animal protein free for a day or so, and your protein bank account will even out. Want to live to be 100? For years, I have routinely measured my patient's level of insulin-like growth factor 1, IGF-1, an easily measured marker for aging. Both animal and human studies show that the lower your IGF-1, the longer you live and the less chance for developing cancer. The two factors in animal and human studies, including my own studies, that correlate to lowered IGF-1 are consuming less sugar and consuming less animal protein, specifically certain amino acids. These amino acids, particularly methionine, leucine, and isoleucine, which are far more prevalent in animal protein than plant-based proteins, activate the cellular sensor of energy availability, mTOR, or just TOR, for target of rapamycin. Rapamycin is a transplant drug that was being tested during my early days at Loma Linda University. Any transplant drug has to undergo years of animal testing for both safety and long-term side effects. Imagine the researchers' surprise when animals treated with rapamycin had an extended, not a shorter, lifespan, since most transplant drugs shorten lifespan. The search for the cause of this phenomenon revealed that the main driver of longevity is a receptor for energy availability on all cells. Researchers, who usually don't lack fancy names to call things, called the receptor the mammalian target of rapamycin, or mTOR. We now know that the equivalent sensor exists in all living things, even worms, so it is simply called TOR. TOR senses energy availability. If it senses lots of energy, think food and summer, it is time to grow, and TOR stimulates cellular growth by activating IGF-1. If TOR senses little energy, think winter, drought, or starvation, it's time to batten down the hatches, cut back all non-essential functions, and kick any cell not pulling its own weight off the island. In that process, therefore, IGF-1 is lowered. While TOR cannot be measured, it is a receptor or sensor, its downstream messenger, IGF-1, tells cells to either grow or go into hibernation and wait for better times. By measuring IGF-1 and lowering it with our food choices, such as less animal protein, we can manage our rate of aging. Scary, but true. My 90 and 100-year-olds all have very low IGF-1, and so should you. How low can you go? Where's the bottom in terms of protein consumption? My former colleague, Dr. Gary Frazier at Loma Linda University, probably has the answer. In his studies of the long-lived Seventh-day Adventists and a meta-analysis of six other studies, he has clearly shown that vegan Adventists live the longest, followed by vegetarian Adventists who limit dairy fats. Vegetarian Adventists who do consume dairy come next, and the Adventists who occasionally eat chicken or fish bring up the rear in terms of longevity. What does this mean for you? It means that eating animal protein is not necessary for good health, and that completely avoiding animal protein produces the greatest longevity among an already extremely long-lived people. If you're still thinking you can't do without lots of burgers, chops, and steaks, consider this. The risk of developing Alzheimer's correlates directly with the amount of meat consumed. Now, just imagine what could happen with a lectin-limited all-plant diet. As impressive as these studies are, they must be balanced against the other masters of longevity in the blue zones, for whom small amounts of animal protein, particularly seafood, are an integral part of their diet. Dan Buttner, the author of The Blue Zones, hadn't heard of the very old residents in the mainland Italian town of Acciaroli, located south of Naples. This village has the largest percentage of centenarians recorded. 30% of the town's residents are more than 100 years old, who attribute their remarkable health to eating anchovies with rosemary every day and washing it down with generous amounts of wine. Having said that, my own studies confirm the connection between the intake of animal protein and sugar, even fruit sugar, and IGF-1 levels. My advice is to embrace appropriate plants as your preferred protein source. Maybe throw in some small fish and rosemary, and look forward to a long and healthy life. Fasting and ketones. Fasting is perfectly natural. Ignore experts who claim fasting is dangerous. Humans once fasted regularly, not because it was trendy or they wanted to cleanse their gut, but rather for a more basic reason. Food was not always available. A study performed in 1972 is instructive. Researchers put 23 obese subjects on a 60-day starvation diet. First, they were injected with insulin, which removes sugar from the bloodstream. Immediately, all got severe symptoms of hypoglycemia, low blood sugar, with sweats, low blood pressure, and fainting. At the end of the 60 days, they were all once more injected with insulin. This time, even though their blood sugars were extremely low, they were completely alert and bright. Blood drawn from veins exiting their brains proved that their brains were burning ketones for energy instead of glucose, and therefore did not require glucose. This is proof that humans can adapt to use ketones as a primary fuel when we are without sources of sugar from carbs and protein. Keep in mind that almost all the great religious traditions have some form of fasting as part of their spiritual practice. Mormons, who practice a weekly one-day fast, live significantly longer than their non-fasting, although also very healthy, Mormon brethren. An alternative to animal protein restriction. Not ready to forgo animal protein completely? Okay, I hear you. What if I told you that there was another way out? Walter Longo of the Longevity Institute at the University of Southern California has shown that a monthly 5-day modified vegan fast of approximately 900 calories gives the same results in terms of IGF-1 and other markers of aging as does an entire month of a traditional calorie-restricted diet. Therefore, if you limit calories and avoid animal protein for just 5 days each month, you get the same benefits as though you joined the CR Society International for the whole month, but without the effort. It's akin to doing specific exercises for 1 or 2 days a week and achieving the same physical fitness results as exercising every day. Actually, that's true, too, as research shows. So, how about it? This month, just follow the vegan version of the 3-day Kickstart Cleanse from Phase 1, which contains about 900 calories for 5 days instead of 3, and watch what happens. You'll find meal plans for this 5-day modified vegan fast in the enhancement. My wife and I love this addition to our lifestyle. You can repeat 2 days from the Phase 1 cleanse or make any changes that keep your daily calorie intake in that range. Then follow the Phase 3 Plant Paradox guidelines for the rest of the month. Most people can occasionally depart from this for a few days while traveling or on a special occasion, and you've got a program that you can probably live with for a very long, healthy time. Another alternative. If that is too extreme for you, then try intermittent fasting, IF. The initial IF program centered on the idea that twice a week you would drastically cut calories to 500 to 600 a day and then eat normally for the rest of the week. To get an idea of what that looks like, it could be 3 approved protein bars a day, or 6 or 8 pastured or omega-3 eggs, or 5 bags of romaine lettuce with approximately 3 tablespoons of olive oil plus vinegar. Guess which I choose. In my clinic, I usually advise patients to fast on Monday and Thursday. On Monday, you are coming off the weekend, so cutting back makes easy good sense. After 2 days off the fast, you cut back again on Thursday, so you can have the whole weekend to relax again. By the way, my patients usually lose about 1 pound a week using this technique. A third option. Still not convinced? My colleague and friend, Dr. Dale Bredesen, a leading dementia researcher at UCLA and the Buck Institute for Research on Aging, and I agree that the longer you go between meals, the more metabolic flexibility you develop in your mitochondria, the tiny power stations in your cells, especially in the neurons of your brain. How long? Every day, try going for 16 hours without eating. In practical terms, this means if you finish dinner at 6 p.m., You'll have brunch the next day at 10 a.m. or finish dinner at 8 p.m. and a noon lunch will be your first meal the next day. Remember, the meaning of breakfast is break fast. The farther you extend this time period, the better. I am not just now jumping on this bandwagon. If you read my first book, you may recall that from January through May of each year, I fast for 22 out of 24 hours each day during the week, eating all my calories between 6 and 8 p.m., and drinking generous amounts of green tea and mint tea, as well as a cup of coffee in the morning. I have continued this practice for the last 10 years, so I know not only that it is doable, but that it is also sustainable. After all, you are listening to this program to find out how to make your life sustainable, aren't you? An intensive care approach. Some of the patients who arrive at my center are on their last gasp, often with physical issues such as severe diabetes, cancer, or kidney failure, or with newly diagnosed dementia or Parkinson's or other neurological diseases. Such dire cases need intensive care because the energy-producing organelles in their cells, their mitochondria, are in shock. And these folks need to go immediately to Dr. Gundry's intensive care unit. If that describes you, or if you have a loved one with one or more of these conditions, I've designed a modification of the Plant Paradox program to deal with these seemingly different conditions. The adaptation is called the Keto Plant Paradox Intensive Care Program, and it's detailed in the next chapter. I'll give you a hint. Such conditions actually all have a common cause. And I'll give you one guess, dear listener, what that might be. Chapter 10, The Keto Plant Paradox Intensive Care Program. A great number of my patients find me after all else has failed. Others turn up when they are suddenly confronted with a diagnosis of diabetes, cancer, Parkinson's disease, Alzheimer's disease, or another form of dementia, or another life-threatening condition. It should come as no surprise that I believe that the underlying mechanism that unleashes all these outcomes is the breakdown of the intestinal barrier by lectins, in cahoots with the seven deadly disruptors. As a result, those lectins and the LPSs, the lipopolysaccharides I've dubbed little pieces of shit, gain admittance to the body. In terms of dementia and Parkinson's, specialized white blood cells called glial cells protect neurons, nerve cells, like bodyguards or handlers. When they detect lectins or LPSs nearby, they crowd around the neurons that they are pledged to protect, kind of like circling the wagons in the old Western movies or pulling up the drawbridges from the moat surrounding the castle. Sadly, these glial cells protect the nerves so well that even simple nourishment can't get to the nerve cell and the nerves die. Moreover, lectins and LPSs on the loose set in motion a fundamental metabolic derangement in how mitochondria, the energy-producing factories in all cells, process sugars and fats. Keep listening to hear how this happens. The mighty mitochondria. As a child of the 1950s and 1960s, I can't help but think of mitochondria as Mighty Mouse and millions of his clones. That's because they really do come to save the day, every day. Hundreds of millions of years ago, the precursors of all living cells engulfed bacteria that became our mitochondria. These mitochondria developed a symbiotic relationship with their host cells and stayed on to produce the energy-generating molecule called ATP that all cells need to function. Mitochondria, or mighty mice, if you will, actually have their own DNA, which divide at the same time their host cells divide. Mitochondria shoulder the workload of handling the calories you consume, using sugars and fats to produce ATP in an assembly line called the Krebs cycle. Like any workers, mitochondria can only do so much work in a day and need a little downtime now and then to catch their breath. Until recently, the circadian clock worked well for mighty mice. During the day, they worked nonstop, turning all the sugar and protein, which itself turns to sugar, you ate, into ATP. Then at night, your mitochondria slowed down, cut back, and maybe even caught a few Z's while the boss slept. The mitochondria's metabolic duties do not grind to a halt at night, but they do shift to a slow burn in the absence of sugar and protein intake, relying instead on a special form of fat called ketones. As I explained in Chapter 9, ketones are normally generated from fat cells when sugar supplies are low. Compare this system to a hybrid car, which runs on gas and gets a battery recharge from the engine while running. It stores this electrical energy to draw on once the gas is gone or the engine is off. Likewise, at night, when you are not eating, mitochondria draw on your battery power in the form of ketones to create ATP. We've discussed the impact of circadian rhythms on your metabolism earlier. In the summer, when food is plentiful, the mitochondria probably have to put in some overtime, and perhaps they even occasionally refuse entry to the delivery vans bringing in sugar and protein and dumping some fat in a landfill, your belly. Not that long ago, that would not have normally been a problem. Why? Because come winter, Mighty Mouse and his lookalikes could slow down since the boss was taking time off and not eating much, so fat could be used to make ATP in lieu of sugar. Sending some fat in ketones to mitochondria during periods of food scarcity is just what the doctor ordered. It takes only half the effort to turn ketones into ATP than it does with sugar, which makes the workers happy and conserves the body's stores of energy in times of need. A mitochondrial mix-up. But what happens when Mighty Mouse and team are chronically overworked trying to handle that huge number of calories you eat day in, day out, 24/7, 365 days a year? Stressed out and underappreciated, they start calling in sick and refuse to shoulder that extra workload. The power grid, ATP production by mitochondria, is strained and rolling blackouts start to dim the lights. The trucks that deliver sugar have now nowhere to go and instead dump more of their cargo, fat, into the landfill. When your mitochondria are under this kind of strain, your energy sputters to a stop. Your brain, think of it as upper-level management, has no idea what's going on down on the factory floor and angrily keeps telling the workers' mitochondria to produce or find more sugar to turn into energy on the double. That's because your brain is starving to death from an energy deficit. Now, think of your immune system as cops. Because there is no energy to pay them, they cut back on patrols. With the lights down low and the cops nowhere in sight, the criminal element, in the form of cancer cells, for example, moves in, happy to use all that sugar that's lying around, free for the taking. This scenario doesn't sound like any comic book I've ever read, but it does have the awful ring of familiarity. Happily, however, it is not a hopeless situation. By now, you probably have a pretty good idea of why this sad state of affairs occurred. Be patient with me while I explain how my plan will extricate you. It requires a quick lesson in enzymes. When you eat sugar or protein, remember, protein is the new sugar and is converted to sugar. Your pancreas squirts out insulin to usher sugar into the mitochondrial factories. However, if the factories are running at